Welcome to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast, where we look into the food culture and food scenes of the Comox Valley and beyond. Usually you would have Chef Jonathan Fraser doing this intro, but he is unable to make it tonight due to unforeseen bus circumstances in Vancouver. He's okay, but held back a little bit. He will be here in a future episode. So tonight you just have me, Darren Howlett, the co-host, sitting in with Blaine Prowse, the previous host of the show, who you may have been listening just a few episodes ago, was here for our big news that John and I had bought into Prontissima Pasta with Sarah Walsh. But the intention was to have Blaine on the show that night, and the episode just ran long, and unfortunately Blaine was cut. So here we go. Blaine's been gracious enough to come back and talk about what we wanted to talk about that night.
Yeah. Hey, Darren. It's good to be in here.
Yeah.
I love coming to Studio Live. It's just right around the corner from my house. So super handy. I just wander over. I bring my big flashlight because there's lots of bears around right now. And
yeah, that's crazy. Bears. Yeah.
We had one in my yard for a while eating grapes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and it was a big one. And my daughter and I came home one night in the dark, and I heard a ruckus, and I didn't have a light, and I had my dog, and it could have got pretty haywire, but
yeah.
I grabbed a flashlight out of my truck, saw that it was a big bear. Anyway, we walked around to the alley and came in the house.
We have a family cabin up at Shuswap Lake, and there's tons of grapevines, and my youngest nephew is, or not youngest, but at the time he was about four. He's the middle nephew. I think he was about four, and he'd walked back up to the cabin from the lake and he was just sort of stopped and stunned. And then my cousin came up from behind and just screamed bloody murder. and Brody was just feet away from a bear that was feeding on our grapevines and didn't know what to make of it.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, lots of noise scared the bear away. And needless to say, we no longer have grapevines at the family cabin.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're pretty bold, huh?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, this one I was between it and its escape route. So I kind of was trying to shoo it away, but
right.
I couldn't really go anywhere because it had to go where I was. So
wow.
It was kind of like I cornered the bear, and I didn't want it to run to the backyard because he would have went through my fence probably twice.
Right.
Made a mess, so I just let him be. And
right.
Yeah.
Right, well.
He left and scared the heck out of my neighbors across the street. But anyway,
that's wow.
Cumberland in the fall.
Yeah.
Every year, so.
Yeah, yeah, wow. Yeah, I've had a couple run-ins too. Crazy.
Yeah. So, anyhow.
Yeah.
Things are good.
Yeah, things are great for me. Things are good for you?
Oh, yeah. Things are awesome.
Fantastic.
It's my favorite time of the year.
Yeah.
It's fall. It's
not to interrupt. I've talked about it on a couple of the podcasts, and I've talked about it on, I think, on Instagram and a few other places, how I really want to get into mushroom picking because mushrooms make up such a large part of my diet.
Yep.
We live in a mushroom abundant area.
Yep.
It seems ridiculous that I'm not mushroom picking. My problem is that everybody that I know that excels at it, and I do know a lot of people that excel at it, they don't want to give up their spots.
Yeah.
They don't want to show me where to go. So thankfully I had a friend help me out the other day. Her name's Amy,
mm-hmm.
and she had been posting on Facebook these great, wonderful mushrooms that she'd been finding. And I happened into her at the restaurant, and I just said, I love the pictures. You know, I really wish somebody show me the ropes. And she said, I'd be happy to. So
nice.
Yeah, we went out mushroom picking the other day, and not only did I find, I found about 2.5 pounds, maybe 3 pounds of chanterelles.
Yep.
But it turns out I passed by 6 large pines. I took pictures of them.
Yeah.
Because I thought that I might want them.
Yeah.
But then when I got back to a service, like a service area, I sent the pictures to my brother and I said, do I want these? And he's like, those are pines. You want those. So
nice.
Unfortunately I was already on my way, but I'm going back there tomorrow. I've got
cool.
the morning off. So I'm going to go pick up some, go
nice.
Pick back and pick those pines. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never picked pines before. I've seen them and I've just never been introduced to them really by somebody who knows.
Right.
So I just never picked them, but
yeah, I'm going to keep them separate from everything else just to make sure.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I'm pretty excited at the prospect.
Yeah.
More so, like I said, I mean, I know that they have value, and I know that in the restaurant, they're in the restaurant biz, which I am, we are.
Yeah.
You know, it's a form of currency.
Yeah.
But I'm more interested just because I love mushrooms in my diet, and I can't wait to use them.
Culinarily, they're fantastic, and they're full of so many micronutrients that you don't get from anywhere else. Like, it's giving you the micronutrients of the forest. So
really?
Oh, they're super good for you.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
On like a cellular level, not just, they don't just taste good, and they're not like a piece of kale that has some vitamins and not.
Right.
Mushrooms have a deeper connection than that.
Wow.
So Yarrow Willard has some really neat videos he's just putting up on Yarrow Willard from Harmonic Arts.
Harmonic Arts, yeah.
That's somebody who would be cool to have on your show.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, it's funny. I've just made a pretty good connection through him. We share a very good mutual friend.
Yeah.
So I was actually going to reach out that way, but yeah.
But he's just put some videos on YouTube recently, really good quality videos of him in the forest picking mushrooms, and he talks a lot about the health benefits and things.
Wow. So, I had no idea. Check it out.
And anybody out there who's interested in mushrooms and kind of the health benefits of it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Like I said, I'm stoked to be finally jumping into this field that I've always wanted to do. I mean, for me, it's totally obviously a hobby.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm so geared up about it that tomorrow's the first time that I've had off all week, and all I can think about is going out to make more mushrooms.
Yeah, it's mycology is a bit addictive, that's for sure. Yeah, yeah, it's cool.
So, so you've been picking mushrooms. What else have you been up to?
Did a little deer hunting.
Butchered
that up. Mm-hmm. I butchered a pig last week.
Right.
Done lots of canning, of course.
It's
such a great fruit year with all the how dry the weather was.
Yeah.
You know, the fruit trees that the mature fruit trees just put on fruit like crazy. And so we were able to harvest lots and, put a lot of that away. And our daughter's 5 months old. So we're using a lot of that stuff as baby food.
Right. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So it was really good. I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
So we got all this organic baby food, the trees that we just foraged off of, these feral apple trees and neighborhood pear trees and whatnot. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right up my alley. That's what I've been doing all summer is, I think I mentioned it to you that night was just, I've been really getting into the idea that, there's just an abundance of food growing around us and I need to just harvest that more. I need to go out and get that food more.
Yep.
And you know, it's not a money saving thing, although that's great for people that want to.
Yep.
Just the fact like, it just kills me that all that food's just going to waste and it's great food.
Yeah.
And so that's what I want to do is just start putting some of it to use.
Oh yeah. The amount of pear and apple, plum, cherries, hazelnuts, walnuts.
Yeah.
You know, they're everywhere in this valley and some people take advantage of it for sure, but so much goes to waste.
Yeah. I don't think enough people really do. I think it's amazing what grows here. And every single thing you just mentioned actually are all things that people gave me over the course of the last couple of months. And I put to great use and then I went out and got more of my own.
Yeah.
Most of those.
Yeah. Super abundant.
Yeah.
And then you get other things like dandelion greens and stinging nettles and chickweed and plantain and purslane and all these greens that grow that people think are weeds, but they're high value food.
Really?
Medicinal food crops. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh yeah.
Well, dandelions are funny. John and I just started talking about it because, as you know, we have, a business now that we own together with another friend. And, we were talking about how I tried doing dandelion capers.
Mm.
So taking the berry or the bulb before it's actually bloomed and pickling those and they're fantastic. I thought they gave great flavor. And I also harvested, dandelions this year and made dandelion jelly. It's at root. It's an extremely intense dandelion tea that you end up turning into a jelly.
Right.
Well, and as I'm telling John these things, he's like, yeah, we should get into making dandelion pesto. It's one of my favorite pestos to make. So I guess now we're sort of looking, hey, where can we find a good, reliable source of unfettered dandelions? I mean, I know they're growing in abundance around here, but we need to make sure too that they're fairly clean and reliably nurtured.
There's all the farmers that you guys are in contact with. Yeah. I'm sure they all have patches of dandelion that they can harvest off. I know I have I have lots in my yard too and there's no sprays or anything, but you need like an acre of pasture that's mostly dandelion and then you'd have a supply.
Yeah, absolutely. Then we'd have a full crop to deal with. That'd be awesome. So. And then chickweed. That's another one that I'm familiar with. I didn't realize it was edible.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. Almost everything green's edible. Some of it's not palatable. Some of it's really tough. Some of it's really bitter.
Right.
But it's, like you wouldn't obviously stick stinging nettles straight up in your mouth.
Right.
But once you blanch them down, they're totally great.
Yeah.
Some butter, salt and pepper.
I didn't believe that either. I'd had nettles a couple of times and didn't really find them that palatable. And then, actually Chef Aaron Rail.
Yep.
White Whale had, did some oysters for us. I can't remember what the occasion was, but my brother's pretty good friends with those guys. And he just brought us out some oysters and, he had done, so there was raw oysters on the half shell, and then there was this nettle puree, intense nettle puree as not really a mignonette, but almost like it to go with them. And, it was absolutely intense. It was incredibly flavorful.
Yeah.
And Tony, my brother's wife, she was just getting off on the fact that this intense nettle puree, she's like, this one spoonful is all the nutrients I'm going to need for the day, but I'm going to take two or three. Yeah. it's amazing how much is packed in here.
Oh yeah. Just intense medicine.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. And I love it. I love looking around and seeing what else is growing just around us, you know?
Yeah.
And, it's just so different. And not to say anything against my dad. I love my dad and I love the way he exposed me to as a kid, but he was a produce manager in a grocery store from when I was, I don't know, from when I was about 7 or 8 years old till probably I was about 20, maybe 25. And, we got exposed to everything. And my mom was an amazing cook, And we got exposed to everything you could imagine under the sun, various distributors trying to convince the grocery store chains to bring in new products. My dad would bring home exotic fruits and vegetables and greens and whatever from all around the world all the time. And it was fantastic. It was sort of reinforced that there's great abundance in that grocery store.
Yeah.
And then it's only in, these, as I'm now a dad myself and I'm looking around this beautiful valley that we live in and I'm like, wait a minute, there's abundance beyond the grocery store. All around us growing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So much wild stuff.
Yeah. And what else have you been doing? I mean, I know that, you had left, sort of ventured off into doing permaculture, which thank you very much for getting me into that. I love everything about permaculture. I think you had told me about Jeff Lawson. Jeff Lawton. You told me about him. And so I Googled him and I was like, oh yeah, I saw a couple of YouTube clips and then it was free to join his site, which just sends you out little, videos every once in a while of just other people that have done permaculture and how much it's changed what they're doing. And, I'm addicted to them. I'm addicted to watching people take their yards and transform them into these like fruit forests and vegetable forests that produce 6,000 pounds of, food a year out of their little postage stamp yards, and it's not even difficult. It's just sort of utilizing nature the way nature wants to use your property instead of you making it a lawn.
Yep.
I honestly sit there and I'll watch three or four of them back to back. It gets me so excited.
Yeah.
So yeah. And I love permaculture and I know that that's not it. I know that that's, that's part of it. That's the most sort of, visual part of it is watching those transformations. But, I got right into it. But now how's that gone for you? How was that?
Well, always learning and I don't have any clients per se, and it's just something that I want to work into, because permaculture is not just landscaping and gardening. It's how to run your life, really.
Right.
So trying to take the principles and the ethics and just turn that into your life and use the knowledge that I have to teach other people and to do some work in that space.
Yeah.
Which is what I'm, going towards now as I've left my job because I'm stay at home dad right now.
Right.
But time will come where I need to start being productive again. And that's where I'm hoping to kind of focus my efforts.
That's in fantastic. Whichever,
not saying I'm just going to be planting gardens. There's lots of things that I want to do. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just it. Like, it seems like a big step into a larger world, just from what I've gleaned in watching the various videos or what have you, is it's not just, as you say, it's not just gardening. I mean, that's the lightest way to put it. I mean, there's a lot of earth moving and what have you, but that's also just fundamentally the basics. Like you said, it's all whole mentality, about the way that you more or less conduct yourself and the way in your relationship to food.
Yeah.
And, I think it's great. And not only that, I mean, I had Tony again, my brother's wife.
Yeah.
I had her on here just a while ago and we were talking and she was completely oblivious. I shouldn't say completely oblivious because she's probably listening, but she was sort of oblivious to permaculture, but didn't realize that that's generally what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're,
I listened to that interview and I was like, I need to meet Tony because
she's
doing what I'm doing and
right.
She doesn't know that's what it is.
Right. Exactly. Doing, she doesn't realize that that's what she's doing, but that's what she's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And exactly. And the fact that now, that's also, I mean, it's not even work to her, but that's also her income.
Right.
You know, and I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah. And, you know, I got to say too, I mean, I'm not letting any cats out of the bag or anything, but just in the few weeks now that I've owned the pasta place, it's amazing how many people are just like, they just want to trade now. You know, it's like, hey, I've got a bag of mushrooms. You want to trade for some pasta? I'm like, oh yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, you know. And, or other things, you know, somebody that offered me honey for a bag of pasta and I was like, that's a fantastic trade. Of course I did.
You're in a whole new economy now.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I think it's fantastic. Yeah. I'm really excited about it. And I didn't think that was going to be a part of this. I knew that was going to get me, deeper into food and a sort of a creative outlet to explore a lot of the food things that I want to do. But I didn't realize too that it would put me into a different that food economy. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool. Eh?
Yeah, I'm loving it.
I know it's true, it's for real, and food is real and you know, changing these weird plastic bills around they're not real anything. They have really no value except the value that we put on it in our head.
Right.
But if I give you a bag of mushrooms, you give me a bag of pasta, that's a real exchange of value.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Between two people, not between us and the overseers. But let's not start getting into that because I'll just go off for hours.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty political time. This episode's not going to air for a couple of days, but we're the day after the election results. So, we're in political days now.
There's some different stuff going on. But anyway, let's get into a much smaller topic.
Sure.
About microbiology.
Okay.
Because that's something that I'm really into these days, is making fermented foods.
Right. Okay. And so microbiology, fermented foods, I get, you know, is that how you would sum it up? Is that?
Yeah, it's using bacteria to preserve food.
Really?
With no energy inputs.
Right.
A little bit of salt, some water, and thyme.
Yeah.
And you make things shelf stable for...
Right.
You know, a year, 2 years, things last a long time.
Can you give maybe the listeners some examples that they would be familiar with?
Sauerkraut, traditional sauerkraut, not vinegar pickled cabbage that you find in the store.
All right.
Yogurt.
Right.
Cheese.
Wow.
Beer.
Yeah.
Wine.
All these things people probably eat every single day.
Yep, probably.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that, you know, some things you do, like yogurt, you know, it's full of bacteria.
Right.
The alcohol ones aren't anymore because they've gone through a different process.
Right.
But it's still essentially fermentation. And it was a way that in the olden days, before we had refrigerators and freezers and canning, and that was how you would preserve your season's harvest.
Right.
So if you couldn't dehydrate it or store it dried like grains as wheat, berries, or rice or whatever.
Right.
Fresh vegetables, dill pickles, sauerkraut. The Koreans make kimchi, which is their national dish.
Which is a lovely, lovely condiment.
And it's super easy to make.
Yeah.
You just need some salt and some water and some thyme, and boom, kimchi.
Wow.
Like, it's amazing. It's so cool.
Speaking of, you were talking about olden times, it just triggered something that I read just a little while ago, that there used to be, it was quite common to have ale. Kegs of ale in your storage or your larder or whatever.
Yep.
And then it was quite common for kids. There was a kid's ale.
Oh yeah.
And, And it took a while to figure out why this was done, because it wasn't really documented as to why it was done, but they found exactly sort of what we're talking about right now.
Yep.
That the microbiology or macrobiology of it, whatever, would actually help keep the kids healthy throughout the year. So it was it wasn't de-alcoholized, but it wasn't allowed to grow, ferment a lot of alcohol.
Right.
But what it did provide as a thin, thin beer was, it was definitely used in place as almost like a tonic of some sort, you know?
And it was calories.
Yeah.
Oh, same as wine. Like you have a fruit crop that you can't utilize at the time. You turn it into cider or wine. And then that's a way to store that produce over the winter, and it's calories.
Right.
So you're actually getting fed.
Right.
And all the nutrition in it of that.
Right.
Various whatever fruit it is.
I never really looked at it like that. I mean, yeah, I guess we all know that alcohol contains calories, but I never thought of it as looking at it as a necessary thing.
Yeah.
You know, those necessary calories. You think about
the ancient Egyptians and things, like they would have really lean times, and they had to, even though they're in sort of a tropical climate, and still have, you know, they'd have their seasons, and then things would not be producing. So you had to have food all year round. So the way to store it was to turn it into something else.
Wow. So, interesting.
Yeah. So, and I'm mostly interested in fermenting vegetables.
Yeah.
You know, I really enjoy that. It just changes it completely. You can, you know, you take a bag of cucumbers, pickling cucumbers, throw them in a jar, put some water and some salt, and let it sit. And then, you know,
really,
they're delicious.
And
there's no vinegar.
Yeah.
Vinegar is not that great for you to eat all the time, but lactobacillus is fantastic for you. It creates a healthy gut flora.
Right.
Makes those pickles tangy and they're not shelf stable, but you need to keep them somewhere cool so that it slows the fermentation down.
Right.
If you keep it out where it's warm, they'll just continue fermenting and get sour, more and more sour.
Right.
So they'll end up becoming...
See, this is another thing, again, I think a disconnect from modern day food to the way it was traditionally done. And this isn't by any means supposed to be preachy or anything. I'm just saying that one thing that I've definitely started doing too is realizing that, there wasn't always refrigerators, but yet we survived thousands of years without refrigerators,
Refrigerators are a blip.
Yeah.
Really.
And so a lot of people I know assume that either something's okay to be left out or it has to be in a fridge.
Yeah.
And there's a full scale in between, you know, there's, various temperatures where things thrive or are happy to not thrive.
Yep.
And be well contained. And I've found that, just by looking around your house, there's, you know, little cold corners, little, storage areas that are a few degrees cooler than others.
Yep.
And a lot of people might remember, you know, their mom storing potatoes or onions or whatever in a dark place under the sink or something. But and that it's sort of taking that idea, you know, houses nowadays aren't really built with larders and
We don't have cold storage rooms.
Right.
Yeah.
But, it's amazing how much is out there that flavor-wise, even just the flavor that you get out of food when you're storing it the right way, which isn't necessarily in a fridge.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It completely changes the flavor, and it pre-digests it. So it doesn't look gross or anything, but it does the bacteria break it down a little bit. So it's easier to digest.
Right.
It gives it more nutrition too.
Right.
Just the way that the bacteria convert it.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's just a superfood, really, in my mind. You take whatever and you add this bacteria into it, and it just...
That's fantastic. So what got you down that road?
Just interested in food preservation, I think, and listening to podcasts and learning about different things. And I heard about this and went, oh, that sounds interesting. I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
So I tried it. I had some success and I had some fail. And then you just keep learning and you talk to people and, next thing you know, it's like, oh, no big deal.
Wow. That's interesting. So, I'm definitely going to try it. I mean, as this was my big year for canning too, I'd never been a big canner, and I think I canned everything under the sun. I started the summer off. I went and bought, I went to a garage sale and somebody was selling, and I had probably 10 cases of canning jars.
Yep.
But I came to a garage sale and somebody was selling 8 cases of canning jars for $5 for the whole lot.
Wow.
So
awesome.
I jumped on it, and then I'm like, now I'm an idiot if I don't fill these.
Yeah.
Now I've got to fill them. So I've spent most of the summer trying to fill them, and I almost did. I have about 14 or 16 left.
Yep.
And then, of course, I was in the store the other day and saw that everybody's just slashed their prices down on canning jars. So, of course, I'm stocking up on the most useful ones.
Yeah.
The ones that I always thought they were useless. I was like, oh, I'll never use those little ones.
Yeah.
And found that they were the best for swaps, you know, those little ones.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I could fill a ton of them and have a lot of, like, little swapping jars. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. It's such a useful skill to have.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just the tip of the iceberg for me. I learned how to do traditional canning. That's it.
Yeah.
So now I'm starting to really explore where that goes next.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
You'll get into this. Try the fermenting thing. You'll get into that too.
For sure.
So I'm going to hopefully have some salami going soon.
Oh,
that's a new one. I haven't fermented meat yet. So that's a new one for me.
Wow. Yeah. That seems like a pretty, there's a lot of room for error there. It seems. Maybe not.
No, I don't think you make yourself sick. I think you'll look at it and go, oh,
yeah,
that's gone. It's off.
That's what I try to tell my kids nowadays. They're like, is this still good? Is that good? I'm like, well, generally your body, like you know, inherently you've got an intuition whether something's going to be good or bad for you.
Yeah.
And they'll like smell it or look at it. They're like, I don't think it's safe to eat. I'm like, well, it's probably not safe to eat then.
Yeah.
So don't. Yeah. Yeah.
My wife doesn't think I'm very food safe because she questions so many things that I leave out. I'm like, it's fine. She's like, you always say it's fine.
Yeah.
Because it is.
I know. And I wasn't trying to finger point either. And I don't think it would embarrass her. I'm pretty sure she doesn't listen. But my ex-wife is the same thing. She assumed that all food had to be either in a fridge or it was out and had to be eaten within the next 24 hours. And I'm like, no, there's a whole scale. There's some things need to be sort of cold, but not refrigerated.
Yeah. They don't need to be refrigerated.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe I would do a quick little, I could give you a quick little recipe on how to make sauerkraut.
Sure.
Because it's really easy.
You know, I'm assuming that it's going to go. So I make, you know that I had the sushi truck, right?
Yeah.
In the sushi truck, I was constantly trying to come up with new products and I was trying to reinvent the gyoza. And in doing so, I had to sort of master gyoza. I'm not saying I'm a gyoza master because
I don't even know what that is.
Gyoza, they're like little dumplings, little pot stickers kind of ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the things, though, that I found is as my base, I was generally using a ground pork that I'd introduce afterwards to salted cabbage. And I would salt the cabbage in the morning.
Yep.
And at the end of the night, I would just wring it. And it was amazing how much water came out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Just amazing.
You're halfway there.
Yeah. and I would wring it. And that's just it. As soon as you said salted cabbage, I was like, oh, that's... And yeah, the flavor was just amazing and intense. And then you mix it with some ground pork and then you fry them up and
awesome.
Or bake them.
Yep.
But yeah, so... Give us a recipe
for basically take a head of cabbage.
Yeah.
Peel it so you got the nice leaves underneath. Quarter it, core it, and then just chop it up real fine. Throw in a bowl. You want to do most of this in a glass bowl. You don't want to use metal.
Right.
You can get reactions with the acid.
Right.
So you want to do all your fermenting in glass.
Right.
Yeah. Or stone. Mm-hmm. Stone crocks are good too. And then you take your cabbage, put it in a bowl, sprinkle some salt in there, maybe a tablespoon, toss it all around, taste it. If it tastes slightly salty, but not almost too salty, put a bit more in because you want it to be almost too salty, but not too salty.
Right.
So it's all in your taste buds, really.
Right.
The more salt you have, the saltier it'll be at the end. But if you don't put enough salt in, then the lactobacillus will take longer to grow,
to
ferment. So... Yeah, and then you just take that, let it sit for a bit to wilt it down. And then I usually just put it into a 1 liter canning jar and I cram it in there and pack it in really tight.
Right.
And then the liquid starts to come up.
Right, yeah, the liquid that's being drawn out by the salt.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then put a weight in there just to keep it down, keep the cabbage down.
What kind of a weight?
Just a rock.
Yeah.
Whatever. Go to the beach, get a nice rock. In it goes.
All right.
And then, put a piece of cheesecloth over it with an elastic band and let it sit for a week or two or three or however long you want. It'll start to bubble. It'll start to smell a bit.
Wow.
And,
And then it's ready to eat.
Yeah.
So it's going to be completely submerged in its own liquid.
Yep.
Wow.
And if it's not, you'll get a little bit of mold probably forming.
Yeah.
White mold's fine, but you don't want green mold because that's that doesn't taste very good.
So, and that's traditional, like that's like original sort of recipe of sauerkraut.
Yep.
Amazing.
Yep. You can add carrots to that. You can add celery. You can whatever you want, really.
Right.
So, but that's.
But that's a good starting point, huh?
Really basic. Yeah.
Wow.
And then to make pickles, I usually take the pickles, wash them, put them in a canning jar, or whatever vessel. And then my ratio is 2 tablespoons of salt to 1 liter of water.
Okay.
You don't want to use chlorinated water either. That's really important because that'll kill the bacteria.
Right.
So you want to sit your water on the counter for 24 hours.
Right.
Or if you have access to spring water or well water, that's even better.
Right.
So you want to do that. And then, yeah, just submerge the dills in that brine mixture. And
right. So essentially, yeah, it's not really like a pickle. It's like a brined cucumber.
Yeah, it is pickled, not in the sense of vinegar pickling, but it's lactic acid pickled.
Right.
So
wow, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
And what if anybody wanted to know more about this?
I would recommend using Google.
Yeah.
Sandor Katz is kind of the guy in this day and age who has done lots of research and written a couple books on it.
Okay.
So Wild Fermentations is a really good book. And The Art of Fermentation is also an excellent book. So
perfect.
So much information online.
Great.
Yeah. So,
okay. Well, I think we're going to wrap things up, but it's been great having you back on the show.
Hey, yeah, it was Blaine. Good catching
or back up. On your show.
Our show.
Yeah. And, it's been great catching up. So, I guess I'm not used to doing this part. This is the part where John usually wraps up the show. You've been listening to the Edible Valley podcast. Look for us on Facebook or on Podbean, Instagram. You can look for us anywhere by just using the keywords Edible Valley.
You can find me on Primal Forest Gardens on Facebook.
Primal Forest Gardens. That's right. Okay. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.